for your reference. Some of them we'll refer to, some of them are for you to go through at your leisure. First of all, we have a number of final reports. There are six of them. Some of them are on websites, and some of them are available at the council office if you need the actual reports. We didn't include them in the binder because, quite frankly, we didn't want you to have a binder that was thicker than the New York City phone book. Second is the meeting summary. It's document number two. Third is the Research Steering Committee policy for incorporation of results into the management process. Fourth is the Northeast Regional Office's guidelines for individuals requesting exempted fishing permits. Fifth is a memorandum from the Executive Committee dated October 13, 2006, for possible uses of study fleets. Sixth is a list of the final awards associated with the Cooperative Research Partners 2006 Broad Agency announcement, which I'll go through briefly. And documents 7 and 8 are slide presentations that the Research Steering Committee received from Dr. Hunt Howell from the University of New Hampshire and Dr. Shelley Talick from GMRI. So with that said, I'll go right into a summary of the meeting. The first thing we did is discuss the industry-based surveys. We received just before the meeting a copy of the peer review of the cod industry-based survey. We read that over, but we didn't have the final report. So what we did is postpone the discussion on that to our January meeting. We also had a number of people, because of conflicts between ICES and AFMFC and a whole host of meetings that were going on that week, that couldn't be there, that are very interested in the industry-based surveys, and we just felt that that was the best thing to do. I can tell you that the peer review was very positive. It had a few very minor issues that it would like to see addressed, but overall it thought it was a good program. And the Science Center also was very pleased with it as a pilot project. It identified a number of issues that to do with data quality and how to submit data and whatnot that have been addressed. The projects have worked very closely with the Science Center. We also discussed the yellowtail flounder industry-based survey, and it was noted by the Science Center that both these projects are already being used in management, and they will continue to be used in management. The number of biological samples taken of both cod and yellowtail that have yet to be processed, but they will be processed before the GARM in 2008, and they expect to use that information in the GARM. So we will have more to report on that after our January meeting. As I said, they met their objectives. Members agreed to develop recommendations for their future use. And that's what we'll be doing at our next meeting. Any questions on that? Okay. Next, we launched into a discussion of potential uses of study fleets. And again, I referenced the document number five, which was the query from the Executive Committee, is to wanting more information. After reviewing the memo and having a fair bit of discussion and deliberation, we decided to have the Pat Fiorelli and Dr. Hoey charged with preparing a white paper to address the issues that were outlined. This paper will be provided both to the RSC and the Executive Committee, and a presentation on the current status of the pilot study fleet program will be given to the council staff. As I said, they're still in the process of developing their latest computer program. There's not a lot of money being spent. Most of the money for this project has already been spent in the pilot phase to get it up and running. Now that they have it up and running, it really doesn't take too much money to keep working on it. So there is some continued use of the study fleet hardware and software, and it's still under development under the auspices of the Science Center. And what they hope to do is refine the data collection capabilities and automate the data flow. This is actually probably the thing that's proving to be a bit problematic at the moment, is how to transmit this data through the VMS system. I've tried a number of attempts here, and it's not going all that smoothly. But we're still working on it. There's no reason why it can't be done. It's just a matter of you know, like everything else to do with electronics and computers, working out the bugs, literally. So are there any questions on that? Because of the amount of stuff I have to cover, there's detailed summaries here that you can read at your leisure. Okay. The next thing we discussed is the discussion of the regional office guidelines for individuals requesting exempted fishing permits. We spent a good deal of time on this, and specifically this issue revolves around justification for granting or not granting exempted fisheries permits during peak spawning periods, both for SAPs and for purely scientific research, and they appear to be two different things. We developed a number of suggestions, which I'll run through. They're at the top of page 3. For the Science Center to review the charts for the guidelines to determine the spawning periods and make sure they're still accurate and based on the best available science, because some of that evidence has probably changed based on a lot of the projects that have been finalized in the last 3 or 4 years. So basically just to go through it and verify that the spawning times are still as they're outlined. To the regional office to just restructure the document so that the public can better understand it. We had some issues with basically there's two sets of things involved in this document. One is guidelines for exempted fisheries programs to set up a special access program, and that's different from scientific research that may be conducted in a closed area to gain knowledge of a species. So we wanted to kind of separate the two and make it plain as to what was required for each occurrence. And to the council to, at some point in the future, after we've gotten this information back, to review it and decide whether or not this is, in fact, the policy you wish to have concerning scientific research during spawning periods. We did raise a number of questions. They're listed under additional considerations. Those will have to be addressed both by the committee and the full council, but we do feel it would be best to get this information updated and upgraded first so that you're working with the newest information. So we recommended that further follow-on work by staff be completed on all these issues before the council is asked to comment. The discussion is provided in this summary to you for the purposes of informing council members that these issues will be considered at a future date. So does anybody have any questions or comments on that?
Yeah. Go ahead, John.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. So Dave, you haven't had a chance to have a response back from the center or the regional office about the first two items, but I assume that you had staff there that that said, yeah, we can do this, so they will look into it and get back to you at a reasonable time for a response.
That's correct. Both the staff from the Science Center and the regional office are in the process of reviewing those documents now, and I assume are going to make some changes or not, but get back to us with updated documents for our next meeting, Pat. Would that be accurate, or we don't know yet?
I don't think we know that. I think some of them are matters of policy that the regional office has to discuss. The other issue has to be examined by the center, and I don't think it's a small amount of work, so they may take a little bit of time on it, but I think there are issues to be discussed internally within both the regional office. I don't want to speak for you, Pat. But that's my understanding. So I'm not sure what the time frame is, sooner rather than later, but I think they're in process and the staff knows about them.
Any further questions or comments on this? No? Okay. Next, we moved into final project reviews. We reviewed six projects. Three of them were basically how-to-do projects, I call them. They were the fundamentals of the card that these various organizations tagged. I won't be spending a lot of time on them other than to say that the people that were involved in them all did good work. The fish were well tagged. We've got, I believe it's somewhere on the order of 114,000 tag cod swimming around out there, minus the ones that have already been recaptured. So all I can say is keep your eyes open for tags. But the ones I will spend some time on are the final reports that have been submitted. The first of those was submitted by Dr. Hunt Howell from the University of New Hampshire. It was determining groundfish movement patterns in closed areas and determining groundfish movement patterns in and around the Western Gulf of Maine closed area. And again, for time constraints, I won't go through all the information we received. As I said, there's a slide presentation in your binder. You can look at the presentation that Dr. Hunt Howell presented to the committee. But this basically involved tagging a number of cod in these areas and then trying to address issues of stock definition, stock movements, mixing, migration, DNA markers, morphological characteristics, quite a whole host of information. And results suggest that cod movements in this area are associated with spawning and the time area, i.e. rolling closures, as currently configured, are appropriate to protect spawning aggregations. Important to the research is two distinct groups of fish were detected, one in the spring and one in the fall, based on length frequencies. Genetic studies currently in press indicate that these two groups may be distinct. We have invited geneticists to come and present to the research steering committee. Unfortunately, at this last meeting, again, because of all these other things going on, they were unable to attend. They are going to attend at some time in the future, and we're going to get more information on how these genetic differences may relate to stocks or populations of fish, of cod or other species. Nevertheless, the researchers believe that the Western Gulf of Maine permanently closed area may be an important nursery area for cod. If so, they stated that a combination of the rolling closures designed to protect spawning cod and the closure of the Western Gulf of Maine permanently closed area may benefit juveniles and probably contributes to the recovery of cod in the Western Gulf of Maine. Committee members recommended that the report be forwarded to the groundfish plan development team for their use in appropriate, as they see appropriate. And just note for the record that I was a principal investigator on this project, and I recused myself from this entire discussion, and Phil Rule led that portion of the meeting. So if anybody has any questions on that. John?
Thanks, Dave. The point here of a low number of cod were recaptured in the area, and therefore it's not considered as an area where adults are particularly abundant, and I suppose that's a relative term because there's so much recreational fishing that goes on out there that folks go there specifically to target adults. So I was just curious as why the thought was that it's not necessarily particularly abundant. They're abundant, but they're higher abundance elsewhere type of thing? Is that why that statement is worded that way?
I think it's worded that way because we had relatively few recaptures from the Western Gulf of Maine closed area compared to all the other areas surrounding it. And again, with any tagging study, it's hard to tell whether the fact that you didn't get tags back is an indication that people didn't return them or that because you don't have a commercial fleet operating there, you just didn't have many chances for recaptures. The other thing that was interesting in that portion of the project was the fact that it was very difficult to tag fish in the Western Gulf of Maine closed area because of the fixed gear that has taken over the area. I mean, it's lobster trap heaven. And, you know, even though we worked with the lobster fleet and we asked them to move gear so we could make short tows, we couldn't seem to get everybody to line up their ducks in a row at the same time, and we basically were forced to work in a few very small areas to do the tagging. You just couldn't get, I mean, it was just fixed gear everywhere. But what we did find was, you know, movement in and out of the area. In other words, we tagged fish in the area, and those would be recaptured to the west or to the east of the closed area by the commercial fleet. And we did have a fair, I mean, if, you know, relatively speaking, we still had a fair number of returns of fish from the recreational fleet. But the recreational fleet tends to recapture, generally speaking, smaller fish than we tagged. We used 6.5-inch mesh, so we were tagging fish on the order of, say, 26 inches and up. And the recreational fleet seemed to be catching, at the time, fish that were smaller than that. So we're not sure that the tag returns from within the closed area are representative of what was actually there. I guess would be the fairest way to put it.
Yep. One last point, and that is, you know, I was glad to see that Hunt's research was showing that the that we are being effective in protecting the spawning aggregations, at least in that area. So I'm not sure if that's the first one that verifies that is being effective, but it is nice to see that.
Yeah, I think it is actually the first one that's been able to verify it. And what it did show was very strong temporal and spatial movements. These fish move into these rolling closed areas. They're there for a couple of months, and then by, you know, in the case of the areas around New Hampshire, by August, they're almost totally gone. And then they move back and spread out, not really as we expected. We expected kind of a ribbon of fish to move around the Gulf of Maine, but they actually spread out in all directions. So there's kind of this contraction and then this expansion, and it seems to go on every year. The interesting portion of this is the second group of fish that comes to the west late in the fall. These were fish that were on the order of average length frequency of 20 centimeters smaller. And we just assumed at first that they were, you know, just a different year class that happened to be coming into the area. Dr. Berlinski from the University of New Hampshire did a little bit of genetic work on them and found that they, what he described as genetically significant differences, which led him to another research project that's still ongoing. But those fish move in the fall, and they didn't spawn there. They came there, they were getting ripe, they were getting close to spawning, and then they left. And I assume they're the, you know, we assume, again, all you can do is assume is that they're probably the fish that spawn in Mass Bay in December and January and February. Subsequent to the conclusion of this particular project, those fish have not come to these waters the last 2 years. They appear to have gone directly to Mass Bay. And they may have come to this area during this period because water temperatures were warmer than the long-term average during 2000 to 2002, and the water temperatures have subsequently cooled in the last 2 years, and they may have returned more to their normal pattern. So it may have just been an anomaly during this study.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay. Paul?
Dave, that research that just said it's an important Western Gulf of Maine and important for juvenile areas. I went to a fish tank meeting where in Maine about area management, and Ted Ames has been doing a lot of work for years on area management and cod, and he's been working with scientists from state scientists and our federal scientists, and the charts he showed were unbelievable, that the last concentrations of cod are in the western Gulf of Maine. He showed some earlier concentrations down east, more east and to the south, and they're not there anymore. It's just around the western Gulf of Maine, and he believes that's an absolutely important area for production, you know, and it should remain closed with his, you know, research and stuff. Has there been anything that's come forward with the habitat stuff to look at HAPC criteria for the western Gulf of Maine? Is that one of the options?
Yeah, we have a western Gulf of Maine HAPC. We also have juvenile area, which is basically the entire coast. Juvenile cod, and in this case I'm going to use juvenile as less than age one, fish seem to be closely associated with shallow water, which, of course, is mostly along your coastline other than a few offshore banks. So, yeah, there's a number of things. But, again, what one thing to keep in mind here is the fact that this is a very it's time-oriented. In other words, those fish are totally gone for, like, 9 months of the year. They're not in this area at all. You have to always consider that when you're looking at it. The 3 months that it's closed is the time the fish are there. And the fish leave entirely and go and spread out to feed over this wide geographic range. And that's something that at some point we'll probably have to address, because it's always the issue of, you know, kill me now or kill me later, but you're still just as dead. It's just a question of where you get killed. So the fish that a lot of times are caught maybe 60 or 70 miles away in an open area are the same fish that were spawning in this area when it's closed. Dr. Pierce?
I've been looking forward to the completion of this work, and I haven't had a chance to look at it yet, but I will in light of the fact that my agency has, the council knows this, we've implemented a closure, a cod conservation zone in Mass Bay to deal with the fish that tend to aggregate their large concentrations, so those fish get protection from December to the end of February. This PowerPoint presentation is available. If I can get a hold of this, plus the reports in the council office, need to look at that as well. Okay, very good. I noticed that there were quite a few very notable long-distance travelers. And that's shown on page 7 and page 8. I assume these must have been the larger codfish. The sizes don't seem to be indicated here, but they're moving to Canadian waters. They're moving to Georges Bank. They're moving to the Great South Channel. They're moving to areas far afield from the Western Gulf of Maine. Did the Research Steering Committee, or the researcher for that matter, have any remarks regarding the significance of that particular information, which I assume will be looked at very carefully when the next assessment is done for cod?
Didn't have any specific remarks. As far as, the significance of the movement, is it, you know, for stocking and mixing, there weren't based on scientific terms, there weren't significant amounts of movements to other stock areas. But there were these, if you want to call them occasional long-distance travelers, they covered quite a bit of ground, and some of them covered it in very short periods. As an example, I remember from looking at the results, we had two fish that were tagged in the just south of the Isles of Shoals that were recaptured 2 days later. One had gone 60 miles to the northeast, and one had gone 60 miles to the southeast in 2 days. So there appears to be a great deal of movement in and out of the area, some of them being relatively long distances in very short periods of time. But if you, again, look through the summary of the study, the mean movement, the average movement, was relatively small distances between recapture and tagging and recapture.
Did the researcher, did the Research Steering Committee have any or draw any conclusions regarding whether or not cod seem to be homing back to the same areas? I know the Canadians have determined that there seems to be strong homing, Newfoundland, for example, northern cod stock. Was that witnessed in your study?
One of the things that was suggested to Dr. Howell was to look at that issue in terms of fish, number of fish being recaptured by month and area. And he has subsequently done that. You can contact him and get those results. I think they're still preliminary. But, looking at this issue of fish tagged in May being caught a year later in May in the same place, 2 years later in May in the same place, 3 years later in May in the same place. And, yes, there is a statistically significant number of fish that are showing up in the same place at the same time. In other words, they are coming back to these areas year after year after year at the same time. One of the things that does hinder that a little bit is the fact that these areas are closed. So the only way to get the recaptures of these fish is either at the time they were recaptured through subsequent tagging experiments that were going on in the area, that ceased. So there's no real way to look at it. And the only other way is to get them from the recreational fleet that is allowed to fish there. But I remind people that spawning fish generally don't take a hook. So, water times, there's a huge amount of fish swimming around underneath the recreational fleet. And other than snagging an occasional fish with a jig or something, they're not capturing these fish that are spawning. Any other questions? Okay. Next, we reviewed the Northeast Regional Cod Tagging Program, which was the ongoing program that's tagged fish throughout the range of cod. Again, Dr. Shelley Talick from the Gulf of Maine Research Institute was there. She gave a presentation on what's been done, how many fish have been tagged, where they've been tagged, and some preliminary analysis of the information that's been gleaned so far. And I want to let people know that the NOAA Fisheries staff has been heavily involved in the planning and implementation of this program and is still involved on a continuing basis. The Gulf of Maine Research Institute coordinated the program and is still continuing to coordinate the program. It's had a number of goals and objectives, among them to develop a collaborative cod tagging program between scientists and fishermen, which has been done. This also includes Canada. They've been fish tagged on both sides of the Hague Line. Obtain and analyze the data from the cod recaptures to improve our understanding of cod distribution, movement, and growth. That's currently ongoing. Make the tagging data available to the public. And that has been done very well. You can either call or you can go to a website and look at the recapture information. To me, personally, it's very interesting. And to establish a preliminary understanding of cod movements and stock structure. It'll help us to better understand the movements of these fish. As I said, there's been approximately 114,000 fish tagged. GMRI is working and will continue to work with this recapture information to determine migration patterns and will provide preliminary estimates of mixing rates between transboundary cod stocks in future months. Project findings are intended to help stock assessment scientists determine the most appropriate definition of cod stocks based on their movement and on their growth. We had a good discussion of this. We spent a lot of time on it. It's a really good project. It's going to give us some excellent information. I would let the council know that this information is expected to be available for the next GARM, and it'll probably be incorporated into the GARM results. So it has a very direct bearing on what we're about to undertake here. RSC members commented that the results were excellent and indicated a number of directions for future research. They recommended that the report be forwarded to the Groundfish PDT for their use as appropriate and added that the information provided also might be useful as the council moves towards ecosystem-based fisheries management. So, again, this is ongoing. It's going to continue to be ongoing, and they are going to have results analyzed in time to be used in the GARM. Any questions on this? John.
Yeah, Dave, with the large scale activity of tagging, are they taking DNA samples for each of the cod that they capture, or are they doing a subset so that it seems like we could get a handle on that particular issue of are there different stocks of cod out there?
It was not part of their charge. I think some fish have been done opportunistically, but it was not done systematically. There are some other studies of genetic differences that are ongoing on cod. With samples being taken from a number of regions, but this particular project didn't do it on a, in other words, the fish have already been tagged, and they were tagged actually several years ago, so, it wasn't considered a priority at the time of the start of this. This genetic information has kind of come to light in the last couple of years, so I would say research on that's still ongoing. Okay. The next three I'm not going to spend any amount of time on. Again, people want to look them over. These are basically the actual mechanics of how the fish were tagged, where they were tagged, how many fish were tagged, what the techniques were. They are what I would call like mechanics projects. The results they yielded were, in fact, the tag cod. And they may yield some results as individual people do analysis in coming years of their particular fish as they tagged them. If that happens, we'll bring that information to you. So I don't think there'd be any questions on that. And the last one was not related to cod. This was on the Maine scallop fishery monitoring and enhancement. It's conducted by the Maine Department of Marine Resources, and when it was a Northeast Consortium project, and it received a review from the consortium. The consortium has done a very thorough reviews of their projects. This project sought to design and implement a suite of monitoring programs for Maine sea scallops, including port and sea sampling and fishery independent survey. It also did a lot more than that. There was a lot of information that came out of this report. It was a very well done report. The review was very favorable. Our discussion basically revolved around the information that was gained and information that could be gained from reviewing what this project did. Concluded that the final report would be helpful in considering the general category issues in the next scallop amendment and would contribute to the body of available information on the Maine scallop fishery. Members recommended that this report be forwarded to the scallop PDT. So, again, this is a case of a very timely report coming in as we have these general category scallop discussions and all the discussions we've had in the last couple of months about the fact that we didn't have a stock assessment in the Gulf of Maine. And this goes directly to that point. So are there any questions on that? Yes, Rip?
Did that study do a lot of work as to where the fishing was taking place in that Maine scallop fishery?
I don't think it actually mapped all the scallop grounds, but it went to known scallop grounds and did work there. So, you know, I think it was mostly concentrated in what I would call the down east area, you know, from Booth Bay to the east. But I'd have to go back and look to absolutely answer your question. And it was mostly state waters, but there was some federal waters. They did overlap a little bit. But most of the fishery is in state waters up there. Additional agenda items that we covered. We discussed herring priorities yesterday, so I don't have to cover that again. We discussed the number of final reports that we're receiving and the workload and the rapidly deteriorating vision of some members as they continue to read huge volumes of material and determine that in light of the – thank you, John. In light of the very complete technical reviews that were being provided by the Northeast Consortium as part of their final report package that will probably do an informal review of these projects and pass them on unless specific researchers wish and come to present to the committee to kind of lessen the workload a little bit. I mean, the reviews from the consortium have been very thorough, and, basically, unless there are some issues that are identified by people reading the final reports, we'll probably just pass them directly along to the appropriate committees. We also discussed other research that's ongoing that some people have come and said, well, you ought to review this, and some of it's just bypasses. Again, not that we're looking for more work, but for the sake of consistency, as we set up more and more of these research set-aside programs, how that information is going to be reviewed and how it's going to make its way into management. We had some discussion of that and tasked people with kind of coming up with a possible solution as to how we wanted to handle these future programs that are developing, herring, monkfish. We already do scallops, so we've reviewed a number of them. Let's see. We also, and I know this, I can just report that this has already been addressed, that we are, have a number of vacancies on this committee, and I know the executive committee and the chair have already addressed the issue of filling some of those vacancies. And the last thing I wanted to cover was to tell people that the Cooperative Research Partners Program has released the list of funded projects for this year. They're listed on document number 6. There are 6 of them. So those are there for your information so you can see what research will be ongoing in the coming year. If anybody has any other questions, I'll be happy to answer them. If not, that concludes my report.
Any other questions for Dave? Bill?
Thank you, John. Thank you, Dave. They did a wonderful job of encapsulating that. I think just one point I'd make on the last topic there on the reviewing the things, the extra reports. I don't remember passing them all, saying we'd pass them on. I think that my recollection was we'll send it to the committee, and the committee will informally look at it. And still basically doing the review, but we just won't have to do it at the committee unless there's a major objection to it.
Right, that's correct. I probably didn't highlight it. So we'd informally review them, which means we wouldn't do it as part of a full committee meeting. We'd read them over, and unless a member had an issue, that they would be passed on. If a member had an issue, we would be scheduled for a full review by the full committee.
Yeah, I just think that needed a little clarification to be helpful. And one other thing, I waited till the end of this, but back to the industry-based surveys and the study fleet issue, I waited to the end for a reason, is at the last meeting, and for quite a while now, I've asked that the study fleet, the two industry-based surveys have gone through a peer review, or one has, the other one's rescheduled for one, but the study fleet hasn't. They're long-term programs. There's no basic review of the study fleet program at all. And I mentioned it the last time, and I think John's answer was a little over 3 minutes long, and it was a maybe. And I still strongly recommend that some kind of review be taken on this project. That I don't have time to down the project. I think it's well worth the time and the money, but I think it should be going through some kind of review to at least say that. Or are we getting the bang for the buck out of this thing that we should be? Is the data going somewhere? All of the questions that arose should be answered before this thing goes into this what I would call a continuing resolution here now. It just basically keeps getting funded, and it hasn't been looked at. And I would suggest that the council send a letter to Pat or to John or whoever the hell runs the show now. However that works, but I still strongly recommend that some kind of review be done on this.
If I might, I mean, we did discuss it. Phil's right. We discussed it, and the answer was lengthy, and as it always does, it revolved around budgetary issues and continuing resolutions and, you know, basically when we can spend money, how we can spend money, and hopefully those issues, I think he said, February, that they hope to know the answer to that question, but I think they do still plan to do a review of it, assuming that you know, money is available. Basically,
I'm Frank Almeida, Deputy Director of the Northeast Issue Science Center as of Monday. The issue with the study fleet is that we are it's not done yet. I mean, the beginning, the presentation that Dave made about ironing out the bugs, getting the data onto the hardware, deciding which hardware to use, we're not there yet. And I agree with you. I think it does need a very serious review to determine how, in fact, we're going to use the toe-by-toe data. This is a discussion that we're having in the center ourselves. And we strongly support a peer review of the study fleet to determine how, in fact, we're going to use it. I think that it'll be an excellent tool for some things, and it'll be a good tool for other things, and it won't be so good for the rest. So we strongly support the idea of having a review. You know, John's right about the budget. We all know about the budget. The CR was passed yesterday, and basically, you know, we're going to be going on until February like we are right now. But that's one of the top priorities now that the cooperative research program is at the center.
Thanks, Mike. Anything else? Okay, we're going to take a five-minute break, and then we'll get into Whiting. Chad, you're here, aren't you? Okay. You got 5 minutes.